The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Talking About podcast. Since last week's episode, the Sixers had a good week. They went 3-0 with wins over the Spurs, Pelicans, and the LeBronless Lakers. But we're going to zoom out a little bit and talk about the bigger picture because we're just about 2 weeks from the NBA trade deadline. And one of the big stories surrounding that is what's going to happen with Ben Simmons, and a lot of reports lately about will Daryl Morey bypass the deadline and hold on to Ben Simmons into the summer and possibly do some sort of sign and trade for the Brooklyn's James Harden. So I wanted to have back on the podcast to talk about that and all other issues Brian Dvorak. You may know him from Bleacher Report, Forbes, Fansided, and he's the co-host of the NBA podcast. Brian, thanks for coming on back on the show. How are you doing?
For sure. I'm doing well, Sean. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, glad to have you. And one of the main reasons I wanted to have you was this week, especially, was because you wrote a great piece for Forbes detailing the James Harden Sixers rumors and what would make sense financially between the two parties. And you really went in depth on why an opt-in and trade would work especially well for both sides. Could you just kind of, for people that haven't had a chance to read that yet, lay out the big picture and why that makes a lot of sense for both the Sixers and for James Harden to do?
Yeah, for sure. So I originally wrote a piece last week actually about, you know, how a sign-in trade would work. And because I mostly, this was like before, you know, the Shams report came out and Keith's report came out on Monday and Jake Fisher's report came out on Tuesday. But Jake, you know, shout out to him. He actually mentioned this as a possibility back in like mid-December. And that's what got my brain turning a little bit. And then, you know, with all this Tobias Harris being in the Ben Simmons trade rumors as well, I wanted to first just like break down the finances of, do they need to move off of Tobias Harris to squeeze James Harden in if it's a sign-in trade? And the answer is no.
Which is good for six. That's what they wanted to hear, I think.
Right. Right. And that's subject to change. Now, this is all assuming, you know, right now the salary cap is projected for next season to be at $119 million. So if the Sixers are going the sign-in trade route with Harden, the number to keep in mind is 151.6 or a little bit under that, but that's going to be the luxury tax apron. If you do a sign and trade, you cannot cross that line at any point next year. So they can get Harden via sign and trade and still have Tobias, still have Joel and fit under that apron, but it would require sending Ben out. You know, he's going to be the big part of the matching salary for Harden. They would either have to waive Danny Green, who has got a $10 million non-guaranteed salary for next year, or they could include him to Brooklyn or elsewhere, whatever. And then Furkan Korkmaz would also need to go out. He's about $5 million next year. They do that. You sign three guys to minimum contract, and you have $200,000 of breathing room, or even less than that. So you are really threading the needle here if you go the sign-and-trade route. If you do an opt-in and trade, they aren't subject to the hard cap. They are not, that you don't have to worry about the $151.6 million. You know, they can exceed that. They could use their taxpayer mid-level exception, which will be projected to be $6.2 million next year. They couldn't do that if the sign and trade, because again, they, you know, they just wouldn't have the room to do so. So from the Sixers side, they should definitely prefer James Harden picks up his player option next year. It's $47.4 million. And then agrees to force a trade to the Sixers. 6 months afterward, he's eligible to sign the same extension he can with Brooklyn. You know, July 1st, it's 4 years, $223 million. So it'd be a five-year, $270 million max deal for James Harden if he goes that route. And it's actually beneficial for him too, because if he opts out, the most he can make as a starting salary is about $46.5 million. That's just 105% of his salary this year. If he picks up the player option again, it's about $47.4 million. It's slightly higher, and then you can get 8% raises, annual raises over that amount. So long story short, he earns $5 million more via opting in and signing an extension than he does becoming a free agent and then signing either a five-year deal with Brooklyn, or, you know, he can get a four-year $200.1 million deal with the Sixers via sign and trade. But, you know, from Harden's perspective too, you got to think like, 2025, 2026 he'll be going into his age 37 season. So if he does a sign and trade, he can only do a 4 year deal. Is someone going to really pay him $60 million going into his age 37 season? Probably not. So he's going to want that 5 year deal right now. It's just figuring out the best way for him to do it and deciding, you know, do I want to stay in Brooklyn or do I want to go elsewhere?
That's the big question. And you mentioned it in passing, but Jake Fisher for Bleacher Report had the report earlier this week that Harden has informed some people close to him that he is interested in exploring other opportunities this summer. It seems like he's never really had a true free agency. He wants to kind of see how that plays out. And while it's not a situation where teams with cap space are going to be able to sign him outright, like as you might think in a typical free agency market, it seems like he'll be able to kind of pick his destination because Brooklyn would want to get something back in return for him via sign and trade or opt in and trade, whatever you want to term it. But as opposed to Harden, even if he did opt in, we've seen plenty of stars to this point just lay the roadmap for, hey, I'm not happy here, I'm going to opt in, or and then I'm just going to demand the trade. Like it's a player empowerment era. Like the team doesn't really have much to say about at this point. So from Brooklyn's perspective, if Harden says he wants to go somewhere else, then they'll probably be happy with what they can get via the trade. If you're the Sixers, we're talking about a team that's 29-19 right now. Joel Embiid is an MVP candidate. We're going to talk about that later, but playing as well as anyone in the league right now. Can you afford, in your mind, to not move Ben Simmons and have this huge portion of your salary cap just taken up with a guy who's sitting at home, and you're not making a serious push if you're really this season, if you're waiting till the summer? Like, in your mind, where does that balance lay? And if, you know, you have an interest in the Sixers, do you feel that's warranted? Does the idea of this going to the summer make you sick? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't say it makes me sick. I'll start there. I understand the frustration with potentially having $33 million and nothing to show for it this season. I think it all depends on what's on the table. And like, we still don't really know in terms of many concrete offers. Like, we heard that, you know, CJ McCollum plus Little or Simons plus a first round pick. And like, value wise, that's pretty good. You know, like, that's better than, I think, going into the offseason last year, I think a lot of people thought Ben for CJ straight up would be fair value for both sides. And it sounds like other teams value Ben more than that. I think for me, the swing piece at the deadline is, can you get off Tobias Harris contract as part of the Ben deal? Like, Sam Amick of The Athletic participated in a roundtable last week where, to be clear, he did not say this was on the table, but he just said, you know, salary wise, you could do Ben and Tobias for De'Aaron Fox, Harrison Barnes, and Buddy Hield. And he said, but the Sixers would want more than that. And I saw that offer and I'd be like, I know the Sixers are not crazy about De'Aaron Fox. They've made that very clear. They've, you know, leaked it to every reporter in Philadelphia at this point. But if you could get off of Tobias too, like I don't see Harrison Barnes being that big of a downgrade over Tobias. He's so much more movable too, because he's on earning almost like half as much money as Tobias. So the upgrade there might be worth it, not getting quote unquote full value for Ben, if you don't consider Fox plus Hield, you know, the exact return you want. I think Fox, even if it didn't work out in Philly, he's going to have value. You could move him elsewhere for a valuable piece. Maybe he could even be part of a Harden Simon trade this summer. You know, like one of the big questions, I think, with the Harden stuff too, is, you know, we don't know what the world is going to be like in July or in October. Like, does New York still have this vaccine mandate in place? Does Kyrie continue to not want to be vaccinated? If that's the case, does Brooklyn, like Kyrie can also be a free agent this summer. Does Brooklyn want to re-sign Kyrie Irving knowing he's only going to be able to play in half the games next year if that mandate is still in place? So that, you know, I think that's another subplot of this Harden stuff. But I like now seeing what's going on in Washington, like Bradley Beal seems like he might be starting to get frustrated again. John Hollinger of The Athletic floated this idea the other day that, you know, part of Damian Lillard's hesitation of not wanting to leave Portland, like he might not want to leave them high and dry, but now that Anthony Simons is breaking out, like does he become more amenable to a move this summer? So like, I think there's going to be more upside in waiting, but there is inherent risk in that because there's no guarantee that you get one of these guys. And like, what if you wind up settling for a package that you could have gotten at the trade deadline? So it's, you just have to balance the risk versus reward there. And without knowing the details of what has been offered to the Sixers, you know, if it's just like, there was like John Collins, Cam Reddish, and a first for Ben Simmons was one of the things I think Mark Stein mentioned that was a recent possibility. And like, again, pretty good value for Ben, but how does John Collins and Tobias Harris work together? And not that you should really, like John Collins and Embiid, I think would work great, but I don't think you're solving all of the problems that are plaguing this team. So unless you can find that bridge move, like if it's Tyrese Halliburton and Harrison Barnes on the table for Ben, I would do that. And I would say, you know, if the Harden thing is real, figure it out later. But without knowing, are those types of offers on the table? What, you know, the Kings are telegraphing that they are not right now. I would be inclined to, you know, follow Maury's instinct here. And that's the one other thing I will say, because all of us have been playing our armchair GM for months, myself included. Daryl Morey knows a lot more than we do, right? Like he's the one fielding these offers. He, based on multiple reports, he has a pretty close line to James Harden's camp in particular.
Yep. So yeah, like, he knows them. He's got Michael Rubin, who's kind of an inside guy with and close to Harden. You know, Meek Mill's at the game tonight. He's probably talking to Harden. I'm sure there's some not quite tampering, but tampering going on. Right. And Daryl's also kind of been through similar situations like this before. Like you mentioned in the piece that he did the opt-in and trade with Chris Paul back in 2017. So he kind of knows how to navigate these situations, obviously better than any of us here at home. And you just kind of have to trust that he knows what he's doing in the long run. And that if you are frustrated come February 11th, maybe he knows something that you don't. And right. Come the summer, it'll all work itself out. But it would be a tough pill to swallow if this plus a couple bench wings or something is what they roll out for the rest of the season, because it just seems a shame with as wide open as things appear to be in the East, and as well as Joel is playing, like you always want to put your best foot forward if you're in this kind of situation. But you brought up a lot of the other possible Ben destinations, so probably a good time to pivot to those. You mentioned that the Collins centerpiece deal out of Atlanta, where it seemed to fall apart because the Sixers wanted to include Tobias and the Hawks were not willing to do that. The Kings are probably the number one most rumored Ben destination. They've reportedly been willing to include Tobias as part of a Ben deal to take both Ben and Tobias, but then they don't want to give up anything of what would be considered premium value if they do that. So Daryl's trying to either, he's trying to get rid of these owners' contracts while getting a good young player in return, and teams are seem to be willing to do one or the other. If he does include Tobias in a deal, if he is successful in doing that, how much, just kind of lay out how much that helps the Sixers, you know, maybe does that like open new doors as far as like it makes the Harden thing that much easier, or is that, is it more just a year or two down the line, your cap sheet just looks so much cleaner that just every move would be easier?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, I think. Depending, of course, who they got back for Tobias, like whether it's, you know, if it's a Kings deal, like is Marvin Bagley coming back, and is that just $11 or $12 million coming off of your books this summer, or is it Hield and Barnes and Fox, who are all under long-term deals, but they're smaller contracts, so it's easier to move them? Like I wrote about Tobias earlier this month at Forbes, and you know, he's playing better as of late. Like I have nothing against Tobias Harris as a player, like devoid of the contract context. It's just when you put the contract in there, he is one of the 15 highest played players in basketball.
Yeah.
Every single guy ahead of him has made at least 5 all-star appearances. He, you know, played at an all-star caliber level last year. He's been struggling some this year. I think the absence of Ben has contributed to that, but he was just never going to live up to this contract. I think there is a fair argument outside of John Wall and Russell Westbrook, he might have the worst contract in the league. Like Julius Randle might be threatening him soon, but you know, he's up there for sure. So I think the fact that the Sixers are trying to offload him and are struggling to find a taker seems to suggest that he is limiting their flexibility moving forward. So that is part of the reason where I would be willing to settle for a little bit less in a Ben deal if Tobias is also going out, knowing that, okay, maybe he does open more doors either this offseason or next offseason if he's gone. Like, you know, you have smaller contracts, so you could still make money work for James Harden, opt-in and trade, sign and trade, whatever. Marty Teller, who is also a Sixers cap nerd like myself, you know, ran through a scenario last night where you can do a Kings deal as a precursor to just carving out enough cap space to sign Harden outright. Because I think, you know, there is some fear among Sixers folks right now, just like Sixers Twitter, not, I don't know how the organization feels. But like, you know, right now there are 3 teams projected to have cap space this summer. So if James Harden tells Brooklyn he wants out, they could call his bluff and be like, all right, go sign with Detroit or San Antonio, because those are the only teams that could actually even come close to affording you. So like, do the Sixers at least need the credible threat of carving out enough cap space to sign him? If they do, they would effectively need to salary dump Ben and Tobias. So, you know, getting off of those guys now, bringing in some smaller contracts, like I think it's easier to salary dump Harrison Barnes on a $20 million deal than it is Tobias on 35, 37.
For sure. There's probably a third of the teams in the league would be happy to, would probably give you something for Barnes, because he's a valuable guy that can play next to anyone and fit into a lot of different lineups and schemes, and just a really fungible player. From Harden's perspective, I know we talked about the sign and trade versus the opt-in and trade. Does he make the same amount of money just signing outright as a free agent, or is there like, where does that stand from his financial perspective?
So he can, yeah, for sign and trade versus signing outright, he can make the same amount of money. Again, it's 4 years, about 200 million, like 100,000 more, I think, with any other team. 5 years, about 270 million with Brooklyn. And then again, the opt-in and trade route, he goes about 5 million above that. So slightly less than 5 years, 275 million.
Okay. So he's perfectly happy to, if the Sixers were to carve out enough cap space, to just sign outright and just wave goodbye to Brooklyn. It seems like it all makes sense on paper, but then for 3 months or 3 to 4 months, you're just, you know, hoping for the best. And right, like right. Joel Embiid's dropping 35 and 13 every night, and he has to do it because the supporting cast isn't good enough to help him if he doesn't have a supremely excellent night. Tobias, he's a good NBA player, but the problem is that he's being paid like he needs to be the second best player on a contender, and he's not. He's a fourth best player potentially. So that just really limits what you're able to do. So getting off of that and creating more flexibility, that all makes sense. It's just that interim period between when free agency would begin the summer and after the trade deadline, where I don't know, I feel like things could really go south from like an emotional perspective with this franchise if something wasn't done. It does seem like we mentioned Halliburton with the Kings. It seems like he's like the guy in the way that Tyrese Maxey was the guy for Sixers fans in the 2020 draft. Like everyone was hoping Maxey would fall to them, and then he did, and we had a mini parade in the Zoom, and everyone was thrilled that that happened. So I feel like that's like the realistic best case scenario from a Sixers perspective right now. Do you agree with that? And what other deals that have been rumored or bandied about from, you know, either Sacramento or Atlanta or some teams that have been on the periphery, like Indiana or San Antonio, what of those would be deals that you would think would be fair value from a Sixers perspective and that you would do if you were in Daryl's chair?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree that Halliburton seems like, I don't even know if he's realistic, but if he is, he would be the most realistic grand prize. I mean, Daryl effectively telegraphed as much in that interview last week, where he's like, oh, well, we would take a top 40 player, but also a young guy with a lot of upside, like a Tyrese Maxey. And it's like, all right, what other player named Tyrese?
Right. Is like Tyrese Maxey, of course. Right. What other one could I be talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm honestly shocked he hasn't got, like, he did a masterful job dodging a tampering fine, or at least like the NBA hasn't announced it yet. Cause I thought, he was where he's like, oh yeah, there are definitely some Kings trades that would work for us. It's like, all right, Daryl, damn. I mean, I think the Kings, like, what are the Kings doing? Like, I've been making,
they're losing by 35 every night. I know that much.
Like, I know De'Aaron Fox has been out for these last couple, but like, God, you're 14 games under 500, 50 games into the season. You haven't made the playoffs in 15 years. Like, maybe that's just a sign that this core isn't going to work. I'm not saying that Ben Simmons necessarily is the answer to them, but like, they've got to do something. Like, this is just not it. The fans seem totally checked out. There's a guy who writes for the Kings Herald who's now donating $10 to charity for every Kings loss for the rest of the season. I'm like, dude, that could get expensive. Like, I hope you're ready to cash out. Like, $250.
At least it's going to a good cause, I guess.
Yeah, that was his thought. Was, at least I'm not paying for tickets to watch this terrible team. I think the Kings, it does seem like they have some sense of urgency to shake something up. You know, whether it's Ben or like, should they try to do a Fox DeMontis Sabonis trade with Indiana, that I don't know. And again, it comes down to Daryl's asking price. Like, if he's asking, you know, Tyrese and Fox and Barnes and Hield and 3 first round picks, like, I don't blame the Kings for saying no. But if he drops it to like Tyrese, Barnes, and a pick or two, or like a pick and a pick swap, then it is just malpractice for the Kings to not have said yes to this deal. Because for all of Ben's limitations in the playoffs that we've become very familiar with over the last couple of years, he's a great regular season player. When, you know, like, he in the playoffs, it grinds to the half court more and teams can really harp in on his weaknesses. But in the regular season, like, you don't have time to game plan for every specific team or like every player's tendencies. You're going to get out and transition more. And a team, like, if the Sixers don't want De'Aaron Fox, a team with Fox and Simmons, the spacing might be cramped, but damn, that's going to be, just play, you know, have the fastest pace in the league, and you're going to get a ton of points like that, you're just going to be more fun to watch. It'll be something different other than just getting blasted and having one of the worst defenses in the league. Like, I think he could help fix a lot of the issues that are plaguing them. And, you know, the Kings, again, it's a 15-year streak of not even making the playoffs. Like, they can pretend like they care about winning championships, but all they care about is getting the eighth seed, which is great. That's perfect for Ben
Simmons. Not even. I think they'd be happy with the 10 seed and get into the play-in tournament or something.
Yeah. And like, all right, cool. And Ben Simmons could just go do that and then get knocked out in the first round. And that's fine. Like, it's the best for both parties. So I would hope that reasonable minds in the next 2 weeks realize, like, we can't keep doing what we're doing here. But I don't get that. I mean, I don't know. Well, like, at this time of year, everyone is lying. So, and like, you know, you're getting conflicting leaks. Like, all of last week, it was the Kings are trying to move De'Aaron Fox for all these different guys. And then all of a sudden, Shams comes out. And it's like, oh no, they're going to build around him. It's like, okay. Are they really? Or like, did they just get rebuffed from enough teams that now they're trying to do damage control?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what happened with Ben last year. Like, that's what kind of started this whole snowball into where we are now. Like, he was apparently just pissed he got included in James Harden trade rumors. So, you know, does De'Aaron Fox feel the same if he's included for Ben or Sabonis? In terms of other deals, like, Atlanta has the salaries to do something, and like, they feel like they're primed for a consolidation deal. I know they've actually been playing better. I think they're 5-2 now since they traded Cam Reddish, which is just addition by subtraction, it seems.
Cam Reddish, who the Knicks traded for and haven't even been playing. He's been getting DMPs. It boggles the mind.
That's tips for you. but, you know, I think Danilo Gallinari is the one guy there, not necessarily from the Sixers perspective that I keep an eye on, but just overall trade deadline. Only $5 million of his salary next year. He's earning 21.5. Only $5 million of that is guaranteed. So if they move him now, I think he's earning like 20.5 this year. They can use the full 20.5 as matching salary as part of a bigger deal. If they trade him this summer, he only counts as $5 million unless they fully guarantee his contract or his next team does. So, you know, you're not getting the potential $16 million of cap savings that you would if you move him this year. You know, Bogdanovich, Collins, like, there were the reports coming out recently that he just doesn't seem happy with his role. They, you know, he gets the 5-year, $125 million contract extension, and he thinks, like, all right, they've committed to me. I'm a key piece of this franchise, and it's still just the Trae Young show, and Collins is, you know, putting up numbers similar to what he did last year, but I think he expected a bigger role or them to just use him differently. Jake Fisher today reported, you know, he is very available. I think Jake mentioned it was just like an actual first round pick. So not like a top 20 protected one, but, you know, a first round pick and a young player, I think, was the asking price here. So, again, I don't know if there's a Ben deal to be made unless Tobias is going elsewhere, but it seems like he's potentially on the move. I know Jeremy Grant got mentioned, former process legend Jeremy Grant. I wouldn't touch that one because, you know, Jake reported recently he wants to go to a team where he's still like one of the primary offensive focal points, and he's eligible for a 4-year, $112 million extension this summer, and he wants the full thing.
Yeah, that's why he went to Detroit. He had the opportunity to return to Denver, but he wanted to go where he'd be a top one or two scoring option on his team, whereas in Denver, he would have been like the fourth or fifth option and just been asked to do the little things on defense and be an energy guy. And that's not what he wanted. And that's what he would be in Philadelphia. So that's, I don't think he'd be happy here. That's not a guy I would want to target.
Yeah. And I want to shout out Rob Mahoney of The Ringer, because he actually wrote a great feature today on Seth Curry. And Seth has just embraced that. He's like, I'm not going to be a 10-time all-star. Like, I'm not going to get 30 shots a game like my brother, like James Harden. So I'm going to just maximize my ability in my role. And, you know, like, I don't want to fault Jeremy because he last season did things that I don't think any of us really would have expected out of him based on his first 5 or 6 years in the league. But at the same time, like, I think there is a ceiling to your team if you are paying Jeremy Grant $30 million a year and you have him as one of your primary offensive options. So, you know, like, his aspirations versus how to best maximize him in the NBA do not appear to be in line. So that's one I'd stay away from. The Pacers stuff just always confused me. Like, once Brogdon was off the table because they signed him to the extension, like, that was the most desirable piece, I think. If you're, you know, like, Sabonis is their best player, but, like, Brogdon's the guy who would have fit the best with the Sixers. So
yeah, their other best assets are big men, and obviously they don't fit with Embiid, really. So, yeah, whenever they get brought up, I'm like, well, that could be a three team. Like,
right.
I'm glad they're interested. Like, it's always good to have more parties interested in Ben Simmons, because that only helps from a leverage perspective if you're Philadelphia. But yeah, they don't seem like an ideal one for one partner.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think if the Sixers wanted Darius Garland from Cleveland or DeJounte Murray from San Antonio, they needed to act on it before the season. I think the window probably closed on both of those guys.
Yep. The last offseason was the time before they both made their respective leaps. And, you know, Murray is getting a lot of all-star buzz. We'll see if he makes it as a reserve. It's a long shot because just San Antonio's lack of wins, but he's getting triple doubles nearly every night and playing really well. And then Garland and Mobley looks like they're the cornerstones of the Cavs franchise for years to come now. So he's pretty much untouchable. But yeah, getting back to Sacramento, they can say what they want. I feel like if the Sixers offered Simmons and Tobias for Fox, they would do that. And you know, the other matching parks to make the salaries work. Because I definitely feel like they're ready to move on from Fox. They've transitioned Halliburton into the primary ball handler, playmaker role with, you know, I've equated in my mind to like a Garland Sexton thing, where Garland became the point and Sexton was just like, okay, you can be the scorer guy, and Fox is just the scorer guy for them now. So they've already kind of wrapped their mind around, he's not your PG1 anymore. So Tobias for them isn't really a negative asset, because they're not worried about how our cap sheet looks in 3 years. They're right. They're just looking at it as, well, Tobias is an above average NBA player. Like, he'll help us win games because he's better than Marvin Bagley. So that's good. So that's all they really care about. So they get Ben and Tobias, who in their minds will help them win games and get the nine or the 10 seed or whatever. And Fox, who doesn't seem like he's a great fit if you're building around Halliburton, then that's all a win for them. So I feel like they would definitely do that. And the Sixers, just as you said, they just don't like Fox at all. And it's very easy to see why when you look at a graphic like came out today and made the rounds on Twitter, where Seth Curry is the most efficient jump shooter in the league. And then you look over at the five worst and De'Aaron Fox was listed there. So that's kind of the last type of player you want around Joel Embiid. You need guys that are going to be efficiently hitting those shots off of his double teams and his post-ups and everything else. Fox, unless you get a team like, I don't know, Indiana or New York or some other third team that says, oh, we actually do really want Fox, and you can work it so that they take him, like, he's just not a fit in Philadelphia. So I don't feel like he would greatly benefit them this season. Like, if you lose Tobias and get Fox and Ben's not playing for you either way, that's kind of a wash. So I don't think having Fox over Tobias really helps you that much this season. And then in the summer, you're kind of stuck with like, oh, well, everyone knows you want to trade Fox, so your leverage isn't good and he's not a good fit on your roster. So keeping him long-term isn't really a great option. You're kind of in a similar situation to what you're in with Ben now. So I don't feel like that's the route. I don't feel like you just settle for Fox just to get off of Tobias's contract. But yeah, we'll see, because it is enticing to get that long-term cap space if you are able to move Ben and Tobias. But Yeah, Halliburton would just be such a perfect fit for both what he can help them on the court, like long term. If you want to keep him, the ceiling would be great, but also like that allows you to have the step up trade where, hey, you still have this really enticing piece if you do want to do a sign and trade with Harden or another like a Beal or whoever else that becomes available. Like you still have this great trade asset. Holding out hope, but it does seem like Sacramento is kind of drawing the line on that one. What would kill me would be if they were willing to do Halliburton, but Daryl said, no, you have to take Tobias. And they said, we're not giving up Halliburton and taking Tobias. And right. Daryl did a weird, like he backed away or something. I feel like if you just do Halliburton for Simmons straight up, I feel like that's a win. Like you don't even need like the three picks and swaps and everything else.
Right.
Just get that done. All right. So that's kind of where we're at the Ben Simmons situation. We're going to talk about what else the Sixers could do with the trade deadline. But first, let's take a break to hear from our sponsors. All right. And we're back. So Brian, we talked to the Ben situation into the ground. We're going to continue doing that as a Sixers Twitterati for the next 2 weeks. But you know, they could do other things at the trade deadline. If they do opt to hold Ben and see what can transpire in the summer, I don't think it would be completely sitting on their hands. I think they would make some small moves here or there. In your mind, what else is available? Like what could they do on the market in the trade landscape?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question because Daryl, you know, Mike Missinelli asked him that, you know, even if we don't trade Ben, like, do you have any other tricks up your sleeve with the deadline? He's like, yeah, I got a pretty good track record of making some changes. You know, it's tough though, because like Ben, Tobias, and Joel are all 30 million plus. Danny is $10 million. Seth Curry is $8 million. And then Furk is the next highest paid player at 4.6. So if you're willing to move Danny, that could be your one non-Ben chip to dangle and maybe get some, you know, a decently high paid player back. But otherwise, it's really tough to assemble the salaries to get anyone of like high impact back in a trade. So like Danny just by default would be similar to how like Talen Horton Tucker with the Lakers is like the guy you just have to include in any trades because they're like he's the only one who fits. And again, you know, if the complication, and this is it all always will come back to the Ben stuff with Harden, if he really is insisting on becoming a free agent and like doesn't want to do this opt-in and trade route, which doesn't make sense and his agent should not let him do it. But let's just say, you know, screw it. He wants to like, he doesn't want to go behind the scenes and get tampered with and, you know, concoct some grand scheme in May and June. Like he wants to go have the dinners at Nobu at, you know, July 1st, whatever. Again, like you have to get off of Danny Green's salary off of that $10 million. To make enough room to stay under the apron. So if you're moving Danny Green and you aren't moving Ben Simmons and you think you might have to do a sign and trade for James Harden, the guy you're getting back for Danny Green either needs to be on an expiring contract or you need to be very confident that you could move off of him and dump him in the cap space somewhere else, you know, attach Jaden Springer or a pick, whatever you need to get off of him. So I honestly wouldn't be shocked if they stand relatively pat. Like if they don't trade Ben, I think there's just so much uncertainty in terms of, do we need to save, you know, do we need to keep some of these contracts for salary matching as part of a Harden deal or like for Danny, do we need to keep him just to be able to get off of him completely? I think his guarantee date might be July 1st if memory serves correctly, but like they can always renegotiate that. Yeah, it is July 1st. So yeah, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Harden does want to do the whole wine and dine thing, like they can always mutually agree, like let's push that deadline back a week, whatever. I will say I'm looking at Spotrac right now and I don't know, like Nate and Danny might have slightly different numbers, but They are $6.3 million over the luxury tax line as well. You just have to wonder if they aren't doing a Ben deal. Maybe they do look to move Danny and or Korkmaz, and maybe that's their way to get under the tax line as well. You probably don't do that deal unless Shake Milton is healthy, since Ferk is effectively the backup point guard right now. But that's probably the other big consideration. Like, I don't think George Niang is going anywhere. I don't think Matisse is going anywhere. Obviously, Tyrese is not. Drummond's not. Like, maybe they shed Paul Reed, potentially, or Isaiah Joe, who are on, you know, $1.5 million contracts each. So maybe they're a smaller deal. Maybe you do, like, Joe and Korkmaz, and I don't know. That's going to get you close to under the tax. I don't think that alone does, but that I'm going to write about that at Forbes probably next week as well. Like, I think of the non-Ben storylines to watch, it's not necessarily like, are they going to bring in an upgrade? It's, are they going to try to duck the tax?
I feel like the fan base might revolt openly if not only does a Ben trade not happen, but they shed pieces to save Josh Harris and company some tax money.
Yeah.
I don't think things will be pretty. They might be the protesters from the Ben Simmons practice sessions might return to Camden if that actually happened. It is tough because they don't have those kind of tradable contracts. Danny is kind of the only one, and I value what Danny brings to the team, but I don't have a problem trading him because I just don't feel confident in his ability to stay healthy. Like, we saw he missed the Atlanta series last playoffs. He's got this lingering hip thing this year. It just feels like he's at a point in his career where stuff is happening like that with his lower body. And I'd be fine getting another player in his kind of wing reserve role, especially with Matisse playing a lot better lately. I feel like he has fit really great with the starters. So you can have him slot in there, and then someone can replace Danny as like your bench wing. Justin Holiday was a guy that I was kind of looking at because his name was making the rounds of someone Pacers were making available for just a couple second round picks, which is super affordable as in terms of what they're looking for in a trade. But again, like, he's $6 million. Yeah. So what are you trading? Is he that much of an upgrade over Korkmaz where you want to do like a Korkmaz for Holiday swap? Like, I don't know. I don't feel like he's that much better. And Korkmaz does a little bit more as like he's filling in as the backup point right now, like you said. So he does a little more with the ball in his hands. Like, that's a valuable thing to have, even though Holiday's probably at least more consistent as an outside shooter and a little longer and rangier defensively. But there's not really good options. It takes me back to when they had the Al Horford trade exception and they didn't do anything with it. Yeah. Like, hey, that would be nice to just have like another guy on an $8 million deal just laying around that you could piece together. Like a few years back when they didn't re-sign TJ, and everyone's like, well, you just have that contract on the books. Like, he's a valuable bench guy, and that's a usable trade piece. It doesn't seem like they've really focused on having those mid-range contracts. And maybe it's just because they have these three max or near max guys, and they're just like, well, we need to figure out what to do with the rest of the roster just to get a team out there, because we don't have a lot of flexibility. But a couple more deals like that would have been useful. Was George Hill's, they could have brought him back and had his contract on expiring, right? Or am I misremembering that?
I think he had I want to say like $10 million player option or like $9.5 million player option.
That was a player option. So he opted out. Okay.
Or no, wait, it might have been, no, it was a team option.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, right. Sorry. Yeah. I don't remember the exact amount, but yeah, they could have brought him back and they just decided he was not that kind of money, which you know, given what he did last year, I understand it.
It wasn't pretty. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was you're totally right. I think we've seen this with these like big three teams. This is usually what leads to their downfall, not necessarily their three main pieces not working or one of their three main pieces holding out the entire season.
Doesn't help.
No, but you know, depth just tends to wither away for these reasons. You either have to go really deep in the luxury tax to re-sign guys who you have bird rights on, or, you know, you've got your one taxpayer mid-level exception that you need to nail every year. And other than that, you're limited to minimum signing guys. And it just gets really, really hard to replace some of that depth. So like getting in a guy like Niang or even on Korkmaz, like getting him back on that 3-year, $15 million deal, like you might be frustrated with Furkan Korkmaz this season. And I understand that, but he's one of their better trade assets right now. So I think they re-signed him. And I think honestly, they probably re-signed Danny with a similar idea in mind. Like if this Ben Simmons thing lingers and if, you know, had Embiid continued playing how he did early in the season rather than the last 2 months, like they might've been in full seller mode at the deadline, trade Danny for, you know, whatever you can get, like any pick, whatever, and just duck the tax.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Green contract was amazing because not only was it maybe even slightly below market value, but they got the non-guaranteed second year, which we talked about with the Harden stuff. Like that's super useful to have that flexibility with that deal where you can include it if you want, or you can just cut bait and there's no money on the books. So that was great. And Korkmaz, you know, up and down season, been super frustrating at times, but aside from guys on rookie deals, you're not getting a better player at $5 million in the NBA right now. So like terrific deal. They did a good job with those two past off season for sure. All right, so that I think that can wrap up our trade deadline talk. Last thing I wanted to hit on before I let you go, Brian, was Joel Embiid's recent stretch of play where in the past month he's gone from probably sixth or seventh in the MVP odds or and the MVP ladder, whatever you want to call it, to a day or two ago, he actually is now tied with Giannis for the highest MVP odds, depending on, and that was on DraftKings. So depending on what sports book you're looking at, he's still listed with the third highest odds, but top three across the board. And as Philadelphia fans, we're of course fully on board with the Joel for MVP. Like he went from scoring 30 every night to scoring 40 every night, right, and just making it look as casual as can be. He had a what would be deemed a really poor game for him against the Lakers, but
yeah,
it still ended up with 26-9-7, and it was because the Lakers were throwing double teams at him the instant he was even thinking of receiving a pass that the Sixers, you know, hit 13 threes. They had a lot of open looks out of that. He was doing a good job distributing the ball. And some of his misses were just Anthony Davis channeling his peak defensive player of the year candidate mode out of nowhere, where we haven't really seen much from that him in that regard this season. He kind of reminded people what he's capable of. So that was a poor game, and it was still better than most players will have in their season. I think it right now it comes down to, you know, Jokic is obviously also playing tremendously well. He has all the advanced stats that favor him. And if it was Jokic again, I wouldn't have a counter argument. Do you think it's just those two at this point in the season? Where's your mind at with the MVP race at this stage?
I actually just checked FanDuel. Embiid is now the favorite to win MVP.
On FanDuel as well? Yeah. Okay.
Giannis is plus 300, Steph's plus 400, Jokic is plus 460, and then Ja Morant is at plus 1500. So I think it's a 4-man race, and honestly probably a 3-man race, because Steph has been in such a slump lately. You know, who knows how long Draymond's going to be out. I think that's going to affect, you know, the looks that Steph gets, but also the Warriors' record. If they are, you know, like the Suns are now seem to be running away with that number one seed in the West, I think the team record was one of the big selling points for Steph early in the year. So I'm not saying he's out because he's Stephen Curry and I don't want to doubt him, but like, I think he's fourth right now in my mind. So it's Jokic, Embiid, Giannis in some order. Giannis, it's like, you know, I think team record is going to come into play for all of these guys. Right now, the Sixers are fifth, the Bucks are sixth in the East, and then the Nuggets are sixth in the West. So if any of those teams really goes on a surge here in the next 2 months and like finishes the top three seed, that's going to help whichever candidate is on that team. I just want to ask Sixers fans, because I know like we love Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid is probably without question, since Iverson, my favorite player who's played on this team, and like we're moving into, I think I like him more than Iverson territory, which already feels sacrilegious, but like then I just watch this guy and he's absolutely effing incredible. I just also want to point out that Nuggets fans feel the exact same way about Nikola Jokic. So regardless of, you know, we're at the midseason mark, like people are going to start doing their midseason awards. If someone has Jokic above Embiid, that's okay. Like we don't need to jump down their throats. And if you have Embiid over Jokic, I would ask the same thing of Nuggets fans. Like both guys are just really effing good. Both guys, it just sucks that, you know, the NBA is stupid and is going by positions on all of these, like all NBA, like Embiid and Jokic right now, both deserve to be first team all NBA.
Yeah. The all NBA argument is going to be fierce when that comes.
It's just so dumb. Like they're two of the five best players in basketball. Just recognize them as such. But as you mentioned, I mean, Jokic right now, like you could pick apart these metrics however you want, because there are flaws in them, but Jokic right now has the best PER of all time and the best box plus minus of all time. And I went on Twitter the other day and I asked some like stats oriented people like Seth Partnow and Adam Frommel, like, is this really the best season in NBA history? And people just aren't really talking about it as much as they should. And the way they explain it to me is some of these stats are weighted such that you give more value if like a center gets a lot of assists or if a point guard gets a lot of rebounds, because it's just so unexpected from someone in that position. So Jokic's style of play, where he is a quote unquote center, but he is averaging, you know, whatever, like almost 8 assists per game, he's like basically designed to break these metrics. Much like, I remember this was a thing in Russell Westbrook's MVP season a couple of years ago, where like he was just shattering all of these metrics. It was like, is he really this good, or is this just a problem with the metric? But like,
it so you're saying matter. You're saying Russ won MVP because Steven Adams was really good at boxing out?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, he's good at boxing out and conceding rebounds. Yes. But like, it doesn't matter. Pick any advanced metric, basically, and Jokic is still way ahead of everyone else. So I think, even if there are flaws with any one individual metric, the fact that he is leading in basically all of them should tell you that, yes, he's having an incredible season as well. And I think, you know, the arguments that have been used to downplay both Embiid and Jokic, like I said this the other day, but like, you know, these guys finished 1-2 in the MVP race last year, and they both come back better this year. Like Jokic, this is his best defensive season. And that has been always the, you know, when you're comparing these two guys, like, okay, well, what can he do on defense compared to Embiid? Like, he's never going to be as dominant defensively as Joel Embiid, but he is better on that end. And then the counter argument for Embiid was, oh, well, Jokic is such a great passer, and Embiid can't pass out of double teams. Well, we are seeing Embiid, especially in the absence of Ben Simmons, this is by far his best passing season. We are now seeing him, like, orchestrate the offense. I mean, there have been clips that have been going viral lately of him like pointing to spots on the floor, telling guys to switch sides because he knows what play is coming and like what his look is. If the defense collapses on him, he's going to kick out to the weak side. Or like there was a play tonight where he is just pointing at the floor and telling George Niang, just effing stay there. I'm going to post up. They're going to send the double. I'm going to kick it out to you. You're going to hit a three. And it happened with Tobias the other night as well. So like both of these guys have gotten better at their weak spots. And I have no problem with going with either one. I don't think anyone should have this guy is definitely the MVP and nothing could change. Cause like so much could change over the next 35 games. And it's awesome that we're just seeing these two battle it out again, despite the vitriol from their respective fan bases.
And despite the death of the center position.
Yeah.
So, right. And now the best two players in the game are both not only playing center, but also these huge, enormous 7-footers that are out there and doing things you would never expect a man that size to be able to do. They're both incredible. And you kind of illustrated what makes it really interesting this year is that they improved in what the other's area of strength was. So Jokic was this tremendous passer. Joel's not nearly the passer that Jokic is, but he's gotten a lot better, as you said. And he's now like leading fast breaks. He's doing these grab and goes. He has one every game, it seems like, where he goes coast to coast. And just he's kind of assumed that Ben role as this guy that can do it all with the ball in his hands. And then Jokic has gotten a lot better on the defensive end. So they're just becoming these fully formed, well-rounded guys with like neither has like a significant hole in their game anymore. It's just really incredible to watch. It's going to come down to if they stay healthy, and team success. So yeah. if one of them surges and it finishes top three in their respective conference, that's probably going to swing it, because they're both going to have the stats. They're going to have the narratives behind them. Jokic carrying a team that doesn't have Jamal Murray, and Embiid doing it without Ben Simmons. So they both have that going, the narrative going for them, and the production is there. Like you're splitting hairs when you're looking at these metrics or whatever, like they're both just really good. So as you said, enjoy it and try not to get down people's throats too much. Arguing the case.
I will say, like, I hope just for anything, like all-star awards, all NBA, we should not hold COVID absences against any player just because like half the freaking league got COVID.
So, yeah. Like, I can't see anyone doing that.
Like, yeah. But you know, like that was a thing last year with games played. I know Embiid wasn't all COVID absences, but like, you have to just remember that context. If we start doing, oh, he's played 200 more minutes or he's played X number of games more, like Embiid missed, I think, one game so far or two games so far for a non-COVID reason, and the rest was COVID. So,
yep.
But I will say, like, going back to, you know, are they going to trade Ben? Are they not? It's looking, you know, Daryl said it's like less likely than likely that they trade him. So the reinforcements that we hope are coming at some point might not come until the offseason. And Jamal Murray is going to come back at some point this year for the Nuggets. It sounds like he might return around the All-Star break even. And, you know, Woj said there's some optimism that Michael Porter Jr. might return for the Nuggets this year as well. So if the Sixers don't get those reinforcements, the Nuggets do, the Sixers schedule over February, March is actually pretty tough. I think they have the sixth toughest strength of schedule remaining. So like that could wind up being one of the swing pieces. Like if Denver moves up to the 4 seed in the West, even, I think that's probably the ceiling at this point. And the Sixers finish 6th or even in the play-in, God forbid, like then I think it probably swings to Jokic. So like if I had to put money based on, you know, what the current odds are and where I think I could get the most bang for the buck, I would reluctantly put it on Jokic, but I honestly hope I would hope I lose all that money. Like I want Joel Embiid to win MVP.
Yeah. The fact that Jokic is like 4th in a lot of these books, it just doesn't make any sense. So you're right that's definitely the value play. Whereas a month ago or even 2 weeks ago, Embiid was 4th or 5th, even though he had started his surge, and then that was where the value was, but he's finally caught up. It's going to be fun. Hopefully they both stay healthy and we get to see them battle it out for the entire season. It's going to be great to watch. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining the pod again. And for everyone that hasn't read his piece this week's on the Harden situation, please check that out at Forbes. What else do you have out there and where can people find you on the internet, Brian?
Yeah, you can find me at B Toporek on Twitter, BTOPOREK. I'll have a lot more stuff coming at Forbes. I'm going to write about the MVP stuff probably next week. As I mentioned, I'll write about the luxury tax ramifications for the trade deadline. you know, God willing, I'll be writing some Ben Simmons trade analysis in the next 2 weeks, or
we all have it in draft. We're waiting. I
know. Or it's going to be 5 more months of James Harden speculation. Oh, no. So I just hope, I urge everyone out there to just like try to unplug as much as possible from all this, because like nothing's going to happen for the next week and a half realistically. Like it's if it's going to happen, it's going to happen right up near the deadline, like that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So, you know, we can enjoy the steady trickle of trade rumors, but try not to get too worked up over it either way. And like, just try to enjoy Joel Embiid in the meantime.
Definitely enjoy Joel Embiid. I got to disagree with you on the unplug. Everyone should be on libertyballers.com every day.
That's true.
When we post about everything that gets posted on Twitter, the daily Ben Simmons watch. We need the page views, Brian. So, all right. Well, thank you for coming on again. And I hope to have you on again in the future to talk about a Ben trade.
Please, at some point
in 2022 and right. not the summer. So
that's when we really tilt. Like if we get to the start of the 2022-23 season and then Ben Simmons is still on the team, then we can bring the pitchforks out.
Harden decides to stay and Daryl shifts to Lillard, and he really feels like Lillard will go by summer 2023. Yeah. That's when we start burning the City Edition jerseys, as right. beautiful as they are.
Well, that's what all the Ponzi scheme jokes about Sam Hinkie. What if it was really Daryl Morey pulling the Ben Simmons pick?
Yeah, you know, he was the teacher. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, Brian, appreciate you coming on. Everyone else out there, continue to enjoy Joel Embiid. I will talk to you next week on the Talking About podcast. Take care, everyone.